Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Monday, December 12th, 2022. As always, I'm grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice. And they're available through the website at whyagain.org. Whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the two words start here in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of the book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 18 years now to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click the link, download it, print it off, copy it as often as you'd like, and use it over and over and over again, absolutely free. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And if you choose to do that, before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you choose to tap on that, it will let you download a completely free and private app. That app contains the Reality Management Worksheet. It contains an abbreviated version of that worksheet process and a copy of the Dragon-Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. We hope people do all of that soon and often, primarily because it tends to improve the quality of people's lives and relationships as they apply these tools actively in their lives. And secondarily, because it tends to prompt comments, questions, answers, and testimonials. And if you have any of those to share with us, you can give us a call at 563-999-3581. And call that number and press 1, and it'll put a little icon of a hand by your phone number. I'll turn on the microphone and announce you by your area code. Alternatively, you can send us an email. You can email Jeannie at J-E-A-N-I-E at whyagain.org. Or you can email me at TJH at mindshifters-academy.org. And if we get a comment or a question, or an answer or a testimonial from you, we will address it in the internet show, and then as time allows, send you an email about where, what day and time your comment was addressed, and you can listen back to the archives to hear what was shared. The archives are themselves a very powerful tool that's available free. Michael and Jeannie are paying to keep those maintained, and it's of the last almost 12 years now, and almost every show is available. So that's another thing you might choose to do, is take advantage of that tool and resource. And we haven't talked about it in a good long while, but there are a lot more tools than just the Reality Management Worksheet, and they're all available on that website. And recently, Jeannie has done a video to help people understand how to navigate the website, and a separate interview or video to help people navigate the app and get the most benefit out of it. So you can find those on the internet on the website at whyagain.org. So let us know, what's your weekend been like? What can we help you with? What's on your mind today? 563-999-3581 and press 1. I had somebody send me a link to a 30-minute YouTube video by Greg Braden that I think is just stellar. And it's basically an introduction to heart math in just 30 minutes, and a way that you can start giving yourself this healing treatment using the principles of heart math. And you can do it in like 1 to 3 minutes, you know, once a day or more often during the day. And it's delightful. So I will make an attempt to make that available when I look it up on YouTube and get access to it. It's Greg Braden. And I'm trying to pull it up here so we can look at it. So that in case you're not by your computer on the internet, if you go to YouTube and you search for Greg Braden, and you might need to type in the phrase, practice this technique to relieve daily stress, 3 keys to heart, brain, earth. And it's just about a 30-minute, 29-minute video that is very useful. There's some nice visuals. There's some, he's talking about discoveries in science about different cells that are in the heart that are literally neuronal cells, like brain cells. And the Heart Math Institute has done tremendous work discovering that there are more connections running from the heart to the brain than vice versa, even though science would have predicted the opposite, because it thought the brain was running everything and directing everything in our lives. So you can use that knowledge, you can use your breath, you can use touching your heart, and you can use focusing on any kind of a thought that leaves you feeling gratitude. And when you use these 3 things together, you'll see benefits. And it's essentially, as I said, a very focused, a very concise introduction to the heart math process. So, again, Greg Braden, and hopefully Jeannie will have that in the link for the notes for the show. I will copy and paste it into the chat room if anybody shows up there. And we have plenty of time for comments, questions, answers. Area code 610. Susan, is this you?
Hi, Dr. Tim. what you're telling about, I did find it because I'm on my iPhone as I listen. So I'll listen to that. It sounds very much like another angle on the practice of the gentle art of blessing. And I've had a weekend more of using it, and certain connections are occurring to me. For instance, Michael talks has a wake-up sheet or a worksheet about finding your life's purpose. And I've had different life purposes, and they've all been sort of manufactured in my brain. But when I find that I am feeling somewhat less than loving or good about a situation or a person, going into the heart and blessing the situation, blessing the person, saying what he says we should say, the little method, I love you and I bless you, and then elaborate on I love you in your integrity, your serenity, whatever's going on that may be lacking, apparently lacking in the person I'm thinking about. It's like a correction and a reorientation. And it just occurred to me just before the show that this is my life's purpose, is to come back to that balance and the choice to love whoever it is or whatever it is. And it's just been very healing because, you know, there's a lot going on in my family and in the world and everything. And this is a way of just becoming centered again, no matter what's going on. So I guess that's a little testimonial again, just that it's an ongoing, wonderful practice. And it does seem as if maybe at base, all of our purpose is that. And when we discover it and start doing it, we feel so much better, even though things can be in a mess.
Well, and it is what the way of mastery is saying is our purpose in life. You're here to be a conduit for the creative energy. You're here to extend love is another way to say it. You're here to bless your creation or bless your brothers and sisters. And so, try it out. If it doesn't feel good to you, then do more of it. If it doesn't feel so good to you, try something else. But find a way to be feeling good about yourself and extending that good, or as the way of mastery would say, the good, the holy, and the beautiful, all the time. That's one way to conceptualize your purpose for being here, as an extension of life force, the creative energy, nature itself. So I'm glad you're feeling it that way. It certainly is, this. The more they look at the energy, and I say that rather than physiology, but the more they look at the energy that we call physiology, the more they see all of this stuff makes sense in a way that we didn't predict. You might remember that when they thought they had mapped out the genome, they said, there's all of this garbage DNA. Well, there's arrogance for humans. That's one of our primary characteristics, right? We think we know better than life itself. So our scientists take a look at something and say, oh, this is useful, this is useful, this is useful. I don't know what this is for. This must be just garbage. But it's part of nature, right?
Right.
It's part of life expressing. And the hubris, right, the unweaning arrogance that comes from taking a look at life energy and labeling it garbage is amazing.
Yeah.
And sure enough, the more they don't rush, the more they take their time and develop other imaging devices and things like that and understandings about quantum physics, et cetera, the more they realize, oh, this has lots of purpose. This is life itself expressing, and it's important. So anyway, there's some of that that can be found in the Joe Dispenza book. There's some of it that can be found in this little half-hour lecture from Greg Braden, where he has some beautiful visuals to show people where the where the cells are located in the heart that are not typical muscle cells or heart cells. They are more like the brain cells. They are neuronal. And so,
wow.
And, you know, HeartMath has found out that the vast majority of signals that pass from the brain to the heart are going from the heart to the brain, not vice versa.
Wow.
And that the heart, as an energy center, as an electromagnetic force, is many, many times more powerful than the brain. So,
Dr. Tim, I'm reminded about your talk with Lisa Wimberger, neurosculpting talk.
Yes.
I don't know when you did that. Is that a new talk that you did?
Yeah, it's fairly recent, yes.
Okay. See, I have a nephew who just had a heart attack at age 57 2 days ago, and he's a great meditator. He's a Buddhist. And he's saying what she was. Yeah, right. She's saying the same thing is, how could I be such a great meditator and have seizures? What have I missed? And I tried to find out the technique that she is teaching, but it's a commitment and going onto her website and paying for it and taking a course or doing a retreat. So I haven't done that, but everything like that talk and the discoveries about the garbage DNA not being garbage but actually having function, and all of the so-called brain cells that are really in the heart, or the heart cells that are really thinking brain cells, seems as if a lot of things are converging at once.
Well, it is. It's well worth it if you know somebody, especially that. I'm laughing, as you know, because people on the show won't know why I was laughing. But Lisa Wimberger had been a meditator since age 12. And then I think she was 30 or something. And all of a sudden, or maybe in her 20s, all of a sudden she had a seizure. And she had them for years, and they were rather dramatic. But she'd never had one in front of a doctor. And so she finally had one in front of a medical doctor. And, you know, it's a grand mal seizure. And so when she woke up from this seizure experience, the doctor was standing over her ready to jab a needle into her heart to revive her, because he said she had flatlined. And that was when she discovered how serious the problem was, you know, physically, medically. And when they did all kinds of scans and tests and everything else, they gave her the diagnosis of a stress-induced seizure. And she had been on yoga retreats and, you know, week-long, weekend, you know, meditated every day, and she was just flabbergasted. How could I have stress? I meditate. I'm supposed to be stress-free. And that's when she started her journey to figure out, how could it be that even though she's meditating, there's another level of stress that she's not coping with. And she learned that she had mental, emotional, and spiritual work that wasn't getting done when all she did was her meditation. Mm. And she talked about how she would go on these weekend retreats, and she'd get there on a Friday night, and she would just be so frenetic and frantic trying to get there and, you know, get through the week's work. And so it would take her all the way through. They'd start meditating Friday evening. It would take her all the way through Saturday afternoon before she'd start to calm down. Mm. And then by the time she got to Sunday morning, she was feeling her peace and her calm and her bliss, and it's wonderful. And then she'd go back to her life, and in a matter of a day or two, she'd be back to the chaos and stress.
Mm.
But, you know, she just thought that just meant there was something wrong with her. Because she was unable to maintain that bliss state when she wasn't actively in the monastery with the other monks or whatever away on this retreat. And that's what led her to start her own research, her own training in neurology and stress, and it led her to the process she now calls neurosculpting, which is basically it's meditation, but it's also using knowledge about physiology and self-hypnosis techniques and the emotional life, recognition of our emotional states, and how to use much more body awareness than, you know, a lot of people when they do meditation spend their time trying to either suppress or ignore their body awareness. And she found that wasn't helping her. And what she needed was something much more grounded and connected. And so that's what gave rise to her neurosculpting technique. And that's why I was chuckling when you said this person had a heart attack, but he's a meditator.
I know.
She was just...
I was thinking of her when we learned. He says, "Why is this happening? I'm a meditator." And I said, "Emmett, is it possible that you have been kind of putting a Band-Aid over some things that you haven't really dealt with?" He's done a lot of therapy too, and I'm not one to pontificate to him. He is only 57, but his father... it's a terrible story. His father was depressed. His father was a professor and very depressed, raising two little boys and then a third boy, very depressed. And at age 32, he took his own life when nephew was 10 years old. So he has every reason to have trauma on so many, such intense trauma. And he's dealt with it as best he can. He's done very well in his life. And I won't go into it all. But there are reasons. And I hope he can find his way to being truly healed.
Well, I hope you'll share the Lisa Wimberger interview with him.
Yeah, I will. And, yeah, maybe he'll have time to actually do one of her retreats. And report back. I'd love to know. I feel as if I'm doing so many in the way, like the Pratavan stuff and the radio show, and I don't know if I want to do that, although it's very tempting. You haven't done anything of her meditations, have you?
Yes, I think she has a beginner course that's got about 6 hours. And so I paid for that, and I took that, and it's got some solid stuff in there. It's not something I feel the need for right now, so I'm not pursuing it actively because I'm getting enough from the other things that I do. But I would strongly recommend passing this along to somebody you know who's a meditator who just had a heart attack, simply because it might resonate enough. And she does a lot of work these days through the internet, so she can, you know, coach somebody in this process without them having to travel to where she is.
That's great. Okay. Good. Well, I'm done. If you want to carry on with your agenda for the day, thanks for letting me talk.
Well, you're welcome and deserving. I will let us know that we had a group member who had a brain surgery on Thursday, and we put the call out to let people know that it would be great if they sent loving thoughts and prayers and whatnot. And so she has come through it in good form and is already home and is recovering.
Great. That's good.
For anybody who had heard us talk about that and isn't connected with any of those people on Facebook, I thought I'd let them know that the loving thoughts and prayers are always welcome, and she's home and recovering what I would assume they would say is quite nicely. That when she posted her first thing from Facebook, the problems or the experiences, the symptoms she was having were almost all related to the medication she was on, not complications from the brain tumor or the surgery itself. Because when you have a surgery like that, you have to get pretty thoroughly sedated.
Right.
And so you have to make sure that the body isn't going to start moving around when the brain surgeon is in the most sensitive areas. So she was taking days to recover from those medications, but was getting, you know, progressing and having the symptoms fade away quite quickly. So she was relieved.
Good.
All right. I will mute you so you can listen in. And I guess I'll go back to what we were doing, doing the review of Lesson 31. And feel free to put your hand up again if there's something comes to your mind.
Okay, thanks.
My blessings. So we've got about 30 minutes left, and we were doing the review of Lesson 31. And there are 6 or 7 pages left of that. I'll just take a moment to encourage people to try and find that Greg Braden, you know, half-hour intro to basically the heart math that has with it wonderful images of heart scans, and so you can actually picture what the structure is in your heart that connects with and sends signals to your brain, et cetera. And it's a wonderful thing to do in combination with the Gentle Art of Blessing, or if you watch the Stutz documentary on Netflix, the exercise that Stutz steps Jonah Hill through about pulling love into yourself and then sending it out to your target. It's all very similar stuff. And the more you can have a felt sense in your body's physical energy system and combine that with a thought process that you actually, you know, you give it more credence because, well, there's science and here's a picture that shows you what this part of the mind-body energy system does in conjunction with another part of the mind-body energy system. It just tends to improve the effect people get when you line up the physical, the mental, and the emotional, and they're aligned and flowing together. So in Lesson 31, the segment we'd stopped at was titled Place Your Trust in the Love That Birthed You. And in this, that love is that capital L love, that energy of creation. And the text reads, when you become so much a lover of the wisdom of perfect union with God, with creation, so that that is all that matters to you, when that happens, you're already 90% free of illusion. And the world will never have the power to truly bind you again. So place your trust in the love that birthed you. When I say, quote, birthed you, close quotes, I'm not talking about the body. I'm not talking about your personal history or your ego. The you that I refer to exists within and prior to all of that. It is as though your creator has created you as the powerful ocean in which you have been, knowingly or unknowingly, you have been emanating all of the waves that have become your particular experience as a soul. that ocean, that capital S self, that true self, that essence of you, that is what creation created. Trust the one that created you as an infinite source of awareness that is perfectly free in every moment to decide what experience it will have. You have the infinite capacity to choose the focus of your conscious awareness in each new present moment. And it is the choice of the focus of your conscious awareness in each moment that actually creates your experience of life. So trust that. Trust whatever it was that created you as an infinite source of awareness. You have been created as an infinite source of awareness, and you are perfectly free in every moment to decide what you will experience in life. The text goes on and asks, why is this important? Your world would teach you on the level of perception of the body-mind. And it would say, well, I want to have an experience. Oh, I just had the thought of having an ice cream cone. Well, now I've experienced driving my body to the ice cream store and eating ice cream. Now, that event does occur. But if you look closely, you will discover that your experience is the value you place upon the event. I know that seems subtle to you, but it's very, very important. Experience actually occurs nowhere but in the field of the mind. You could just as easily go to the store and eat the ice cream and have your mind on a book that you're writing, or the remembrance of a great love affair, or a great movie from the night before, and never even notice the taste of the ice cream. And then you get home, and your wife or your husband says, well, dear, did you have a good trip to the ice cream store? And you reply, oh, that's right. I did stop at the store. Well, you know, to tell you the truth, I don't even remember what I had. So if that can happen, where does the experience occur? It does not occur at the level of the body-mind itself. It occurs at the level of mind. And mind shapes experience according to what it chooses to value. Now, does that mean that you just drop doing anything in the world? No. An awakened being in the world simply delights and has fun from a state of clarity of knowing that whatever they choose to do with the body-mind is merely a free choice based on what they are choosing to value in the moment. And if they own that valuation, they can totally enjoy the experience they are having. Then they have come full circle. If they want to design a website, if they want to be a banker, if they want to be a dancer, a prostitute, or a farmer, it no longer matters. For the mind that is awake, while the body lasts, merely sees experience arise and pass away. It takes total ownership and realizes that it has the power to create its experience as being delightful, fulfilling, and a blessing, regardless of what the body-mind is actually doing. There can be no difference. It does not matter if you are a teacher standing at a boat on the shores of a great lake in what you now call Israel, talking to a horde of hundreds, or perhaps if you're seeing if you can actually make a few fish and loaves of bread feed 5,000. And then you just say, well, how about that? That was fun. There's no difference between that and driving a truck in New York City and delivering frozen fish. If the mind within the soul is taking complete ownership and delighting in the mystery of creating experience, and choosing to bring enjoyment and freedom to that moment, there is no difference. This is why events of the world can never bind you. All suffering comes because of the interpretation you are overlaying over events. And in that very moment, you have used the Creator's gift to you, which is the power of awareness, and you've used it to create experience. Once again, my crucifixion was my final learning lesson in the realization that I had broken the spell. I was no longer under the spell of the egoic mind or the body mind. I merely looked upon my experience and decided to freely be in a state of love in the midst of that context. You are free to be in a state of love in the midst of any context as you watch and observe the waves of temporality come and go. And as you see that happen, as you develop that capacity within yourself through the choices for love, capital L love, through the choices for forgiveness, which means to dismantle your perceptions, and through the choices to be happy instead of right, to live in innocence and wonder instead of certainty and dread, and to rest in true knowledge, true knowing, rather than the relative knowledge of the world. And you come to see that all that is arising and passing away can never leave you, that loss is impossible. For where the mind chooses to rest in love, all things that arise and pass away are remembered and restored and sanctified. There is perfect peace. Though a beloved friend passes away to what you would call death, because you do not identify the friend with the body-mind, and because you do not then perceive that you can no longer love your friend, you just enjoy loving your friend. As you abide in love, you begin to experience the reality that nothing dies. Nothing dies. For pure intelligence can go nowhere. One of your scientists once said, quote, "I think I have figured it out. Energy is what makes up everything, and it can never go anywhere. It can only change form. But the essence or the energy remains," close quote. That is not unlike a mystic or a sage or a great savior or messiah or a very ordinary everyday person waking up and saying, quote, "You know, only love is real. And in love, all things exist forever. I am not separate. I am not lost. I am free," close quotes. The great journey in the field of space and time is to allow that awareness to settle into your beingness so that that quality of awareness permeates and pervades the level of the egoic mind, the level of interpretation, and the level of perception of the body-mind, that is, the apparatus of the brain and the nervous system. All of that is still going on, but you begin to pervade it with the growing awareness that only love is real, and that, quote, "I have the power to extend forgiveness," or "I have the power to dismantle my perceptions of being separate." Every time the mind trusts in the one that created it and rests in that space, in that peace, a miracle occurs. Every time that you have extended forgiveness or dismantled your false perceptions, a miracle has occurred. For you have withdrawn valuation of an old perceptual system, and you've chosen for reality, or actuality in Michael Rice's terms. The enlightened sage is merely one who has cultivated the practice of training the mind to to choose the reality of love under all circumstances. Through that one's many successes, they have come to know that what they have chosen is true. Creation itself has been revealed. Loyalty is no longer a question. So the next section is the question, what will you choose to value? Trust and loyalty, then, must flow from the mind and its power to choose what it will value. So, be you, therefore, one who chooses to be loyal to love. Be you, therefore, loyal to your perfect union with all of creation. Trust that one who birthed you and who has been guiding your journey home all along. For remember, I have said often that from the very moment of the dream of separation and when it began to be dreamed, already the answer was provided. Some call it the Holy Spirit. Some call it the Great Comforter. Some call it Ruka Dakudsha. It's the right-mindedness in the depth of your being that cannot be touched. It cannot be chipped, dented, rusted, faded, or broken in any way. So go ahead and rest in the right-mindedness of choosing only capital L love. Extend complete freedom to the waves that come and go. In this case, the weather is a wave. Caesar is a wave. Your spouse is a wave. Extend complete freedom to everyone and everything that you experience. They are a wave. They will come and they will go, at least as far as you would look at them from the body mind. But if you abide in the field of capital L love, you abide in timelessness and eternity. You abide as the spaciousness that embraces all things, trusts all things, and thereby transcends all things. Here then, beloved friends, is the pure essence of what loyalty and trust, of loyalty and trust. If your loyalty is in anything that can crumble, you have merely not fully chosen to place your loyalty in that which cannot crumble. If your trust is in the requirement that individuals act and behave in a certain way, you have not yet come to trust the perfection of love that is already at work in everyone's lives, calling them to deeper and deeper levels of remembrance. So see then the perfection of all events. For the waves that arise in the temporality called the world, these waves have no power in and of themselves. They are already held in the arms of a perfectly loving creation, and each event truly serves no purpose except to nudge that soul, that spark of pure awareness or intelligence, nudge that soul to look deeper beyond its illusions. When anyone attacks you or projects upon you, they're merely crying out in their own fear and insanity. The awakened one looks upon them with love and merely says, "Oh, is that so? Well, very well. Yes, thank you for sharing. Have a nice day." And that one goes on in trusting and lets their life be an expression of the loyalty that they give only to the voice of the Holy One within them. So look and see where you are with trust and loyalty in your own life. Simply ask yourself, where are my idols? What am I attached to and why? Remember that those with thoughts of I and mine, those know not the true nature of things. When you say my car, or my wife, you're not dealing with reality, with actuality. For all things belong to the flow of creation. There is nothing that you can possess except the reality of what you are as the thought of love in form. the next heading is, the next section is titled, When You Choose Love, You Become Free. Text reads, Come to see then that when you choose love, you become free. Who can harm you? What gain or loss can affect your peace? In each moment as you remember love, you give love. Everywhere you go and everyone you see is touched in a quiet and secret place. They may not know why they feel attracted to being in your presence, but you will know. You are simply choosing to be, and mark my words well here, you are merely choosing to finally awaken and be creation incarnate. For creation is but love, and when you love, there is only creation. Remember then always, beloved friends, that which crumbles can only be form and not content. Love can never crumble because it is the content that is the presence of creation's reality. Because love is content, it is unchangeable, unchanged, and unchanging forever. Perfect freedom comes to any mind that shifts its identity from the level of the body, from the level of the interpretive mind, from the level of the egoic mind. Egoic mind insists and it insists that its constructs are real, that its constructs are correct and valuable. But perfect freedom comes to any mind that shifts its identity from that and becomes identified with love, capital L, love. Identity with that and what is conditional and temporal can never produce what is unconditional and eternal. The power of mind can leap from the condition to the unconditional through the decision to place value only on that. Well, do I understand that what arises within the body-mind is a fear of survival. Yet it is a useless fear, since the body-mind, from the moment of its conception, has been marching inexorably toward its demise. This just puts me in mind of how many people all throughout our culture, whether they are medical doctors or they are priests or they are just everyday people, have been trained to fear death as this terrible, horrible thing, instead of simply a transition from one state of energy to another. The text goes on and says, if the body-mind itself is completely powerless, which it is, the body-mind cannot live in eternity. Then everything dependent upon the body-mind must crumble with it. Everything then built as a house upon the foundation of your having become identified with the perceptual level of the body-mind, which means all of your interpretations, all of your thoughts, and the insistence of the egoic mind on being right, these are all like floors in a house built on a foundation of error and illusion. You might as well own it now. They are all crumble. Illusions have no life. That is what makes them illusions. Only in reality is life finally found. Yes, you do feel that crumbling going on, for what crumbles in the mind sends a shockwave like a ripple down through the body-mind, through the brain, through the nervous system. And the body shakes and groans, and maybe it complains and cries, but it's nothing more than the crumbling of illusion. Eventually, the body itself must crumble as an illusion, for the mind that grows in the radiance of its awakening must finally put away the entire physical dimension as a toy outgrown. The body-mind, the nervous system, can no longer contain you, for what you value is the radiance of merely being the presence of creation's love. You begin to realize that you do not need a body-mind at all in order to extend love. While the body-mind lasts, love it, embrace it, allow it. Do not expect great things from it. Just use it as a temporary communication device. And since what you want is capital L love, practice sending out only love, teaching only love, sharing only your loving thoughts. Teaching love is not talking about love, not about the philosophy of love, and not about the metaphysics of love. You teach love, being love in each moment. And you can only be loving by allowing yourself to feel the presence of love in and as your moment-to-moment experience. And because love is unconditional, you are free now. No set of circumstances must change before you have the power to be in the presence of love. This is the same thing as saying that creation is given to you by grace in each moment, and you are asked only to open and receive. Only love is real. Only love allows you to transcend the great fear, the great suffering that comes only from a temporary mistaken identity problem, an authority problem. You think your construct of the world is your authority. You think the body-mind is who you really are. This is merely an identity problem, an authority problem. When you come to know that you are merely the expression of that one, pure spirit, love, when you come to know that, you are free from the world. Now, will the world get it? Will the world say, oh, I'm really glad that you're free? Of course not, since the world is an attempt to be other than the truth of the kingdom. Therefore, when anyone projects upon you at any time, when anyone is in any way anything but loving, it can only be because they are still choosing to insist on the rightness of their construct of the sensory data that has come through their nervous system, which they have grown to be identified with. In other words, they are living in illusion. Only love is real. If you want to be one who is sane and awake, be only with one who chooses to teach only love. Let those people be your friends. Let those be your playmates. Let those be your lovers and your spouses, for only they are capable of honoring the capital T truth that is true always. And only they are capable of seeing it as the very essence of your soul. That is why there is a great attraction to one who is awake, for they see you as you truly are. They see you to your essence because they see from their own essence. Two are but one and the same, for the holy offspring of creation is one thing. Therefore, choose love and transcend the suffering that is the world. So, the last section here reads, review where you have placed your loyalty. Look well then, beloved friends, over the next 30 days. Enjoy merely looking at where you have placed your loyalty in the past and where you are placing it now. Look at the grand journey that you have made. What on earth has changed your loyalty from your teddy bear to creation itself, if not creation itself? Think not then that you have been apart from that one. For in each moment of your experience, even as you believed in the illusions that the body's mind would show you, already that one who is but love was working to dissolve your illusions, one by one, in the way unique to the dynamics of your own soul. When a ship sails into the harbor, it is home. The long journey is forgotten. Perhaps there will be a few stories told in the pub as everyone has a beer. But in a day or two, a week or a month, the journey fades from awareness. And friends merely abide together, growing flowers, dancing in the evenings, observing the sunset, and giving hugs and kisses. When the ship sails into the harbor, the journey is over. There is only calm water, though around it the storm may rage. So let it. Let the storm of life rage. Merely identify with the peace beyond all understanding. The peace that comes as a mind comes to choose only to identify with love. Beloved friends, is the result of the shift of identity, which emerges by placing your trust and loyalty only in that one who is love. Allow then everything else to crumble. Does that mean that you just give up your golden coins? Of course not. For that would be to say that the golden coins have a power to bind you, and they do not. Neither the having of them nor the lack of them can bind you. Only your decision not to love can bind you and make you suffer. Give then perfect freedom to all created things, for they belong not to you, nor were they given to you to give you security or to boost your ego or to make you happy. They're given for your enjoyment and for you to bless. For the Christ who walks this earth knows that his or her primary purpose is to bless the Father's creations, to set all things free in the sanctity of their own deep and perfect union with creation. So seek to possess nothing or no one. Seek to change nothing and no one. Seek only to extend love. And in extending love, you are set free. So then, as you conclude this lesson, simply make the decision to spend 5 minutes doing nothing but extending love to all that you see through your body's eyes and all that you notice arising in the mind as a memory or an image of a friend or what have you, maybe even an event. Any event that has occurred, simply decide to extend love to it, and that is all. Then try to tell yourself that peace is a long way off. Peace is present in every decision for love. Therefore, indeed, with perfect trust and perfect loyalty, I look upon you and already know that you are born on the wings of that love that carries you away itself. In perfect trust and loyalty, I look upon the holy and the begotten child of the Creator and know that the dream of separation has already been corrected, and you abide in perfect safety now. For the events of space and time can never touch or alter the spirit, the pure intelligence, the infinite awareness that is the truth of who you are. It's up to you to decide to enjoy that power of awareness by selecting and sharing only loving thoughts. So that's our review of Lesson 31. I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff called love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. And I'll welcome Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. Appreciate you.
Same here. You're welcome and deserving. Have a wonderful show.
Thanks. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. Today is Monday, December the 12th, 2022, and our call-in number is 563-999-3581, and press 1. That puts you in the queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. We'll give Michael a minute to dial in there. I'm going to say hello to Susan. I know you probably already talked to Dr. Tim, but I'm just going to say hello. How are you doing today?
Can you hear me, Jeannie?
I can hear you.
Oh, good. Oh, I'm doing fine, thank you. How are you guys doing?
I just went and picked up Aria's school, and so she's just getting settled in here. I'm going to get her snack, and Michael just signed on. And we did. We are participating in a Earth class that Carrie Lee actually gifted part of it to us to participate in, and it is kind of what we're already doing, you know, taking care of the soil, building it up, and planting.
Wonderful.
And how to handle water runoff and things like that. So we just finished that class just a few minutes ago.
Wow, that's great.
Thank you, dear heart, and welcome, Miss Susan. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. We're chugging along. I'd like to make a teeny report about Luke. He's 41 or 42 days sober. He's excited about becoming a sponsor. He said he's finally doing AA, and he's living in a sober house out in California, and he's been admitted to the University of Northern Florida. I think that's how you say it. He's not going to go back to his other university where it's a big party school and everybody's drinking there. And I told him that you wanted to greet him. And he said, oh, that's so nice. That's so sweet. Tell him hello. So,
does he have his cell phone?
Yes, he does. Do you still have
his
number?
Cool, then I'll try him again. See if I can catch
up
with him. That sounds exciting. Good for him.
Yeah, I know. It's an amazing thing that he's done. He's finally done it. He called yesterday and said, I'm still going back and forth in my mind between going back to App State and going to this new place. If I go to App State, I can graduate a lot sooner. I have to make up a lot if I go to a new school. So we talked it through, and I said, what does your gut feel? And he said, well, I'm afraid about going to App State. I hope I can stay strong there. I feel as if I have to tough it out. And I said, who's talking to you in your mind to tell you to tough it out? And he said, oh, my God, it's my dad. I said, do you really have to listen to that voice right now? He said, no, I guess I don't. And I said, you want to toss a coin and let's just see what you feel like when you get an answer. So he said, okay. And he pulled out a coin and he said, all right, heads, I go to Florida. Tails, I go to App State. It came out heads and he said, oh my God, I'm so relieved. I said, well, isn't that your answer? So he's going to go to Florida and put in more time at school. But that's not the most important thing, how long it's going to take. So anyway, thanks for listening to that report.
You know, one of the things that he might look at if he's going to the school in Florida is a lot of schools
mm-hmm.
will allow him to clap out of that extra work. You know, I've already done this, present some documentation, and they'll give him credit for it. So perhaps he wouldn't be as far behind as he thinks if he looks at that and asks them if they'll, you know, I know Jeannie went through a process of that when she went to school, and literally the university she went to now has in their catalog, why is this happening to me again, 101, healing through relationships, 102, communication, did you hear what I think? She did a synopsis of those courses and, you know, verified what she'd learned in them, and they gave her credit for it and put it in their catalog. So what he's done already, they may offer him credit for, and there is some significant work to do to write it up, but he doesn't have to, you know, perhaps do the whole body of classwork again.
Wow, if you talk to him about that, that would be fantastic.
I'll put that in his ear. And how's Michael doing?
He may be listening to the show. I'm not sure. He's doing well. You know, he keeps telling me stories about his life. And I said, Michael, we need to make a book out of this. This is a very, very, the life you have led is worth hearing about. And he found a friend who said he would take dictation. He would actually write it up, because Michael says he's just not that kind of person that can put it down on paper.
Right.
But he could tell it to someone. And so this young friend, he's a musician, he's much younger, said he would do it. And now today he's telling me, well, maybe he won't do it. He's awfully busy and all this. But I really think Michael's story should be told. He keeps, you know, he'll buttonhole me when I'm halfway going somewhere, and he'll tell me, and he's often blamed himself. I start babbling. I start, well, what he's doing is he's trying to be heard. He's trying to tell his story. And I would love it if he really did do that. And I really think that could be his ticket back to, you know, he doesn't want to be homeless for the rest of his life. He
could
wants
be
a
livelihood,
home.
Sure.
Yeah, of course. So it's just the beginning stages, but I'm excited about it, and I think he thinks it might be a good idea. And I
That's
know,
awesome.
On,
and, you know
on, there are things like blogs where you can do it in increments as a blog, and you can make money from them, but I have no clue how that works. If
right.
anybody on
he
the radio
also,
show knows, yeah, go ahead.
Well, he could also record them, and mm-hmm. there's an app called Fiverr where people from all over the
oh, yeah.
world offer their services, uh-huh. and sometimes extremely reasonably. And so with very little funding, he might be able to find somebody that could take what he records and put it into a written format, and then you know, you can go through something like bookbaby.com, and for $100, $200, you can publish an e-book. And BookBaby, now I haven't looked at their stuff in several years, but they were formed. There used to be a company called CD Baby where artists had trouble, you know, getting through the gate of the music industry. So they formed this thing called CD Baby where artists could publish and, you know, sell their music. Well, then they opened a division called Book Baby, and they'll take your book and format it into a digital format that'll be put in every digital catalog in the world, so it could be sold on Amazon, it could be sold in, you know, Sony and Sony Books and da-da-da-da-da. They'll put that all out there and give him 100% of the royalties on it. So it could be something that could be done fairly economically and put out there to the world. And I mean, if he puts it on Amazon for $2.99, they give 70% of the royalty. 70% of that $2.99 goes in his pocket, and BookBaby
mm-hmm.
collects it for free and remits it to him from all these different sources.
Wow.
So that might be a
mm-hmm.
you know, Fiverr, you might find somebody that could take his dictated, you know, just record your conversations, ask him questions, or record them, and then Fiverr, you know, maybe somebody in India who speaks English well, you know, that might be their thing to translate. And you know, the cost of that, what somebody would think of as being very abundant in India would be, you know, pennies here by comparison. That
mm-hmm.
might be a method to move forward.
Well, I wrote down the three things, Fiverr, app, Book Baby, and CD Baby down. And, yeah, I've even thought that I should do it, but I don't think I want to do it, and that's not very nice. But I'm hoping he could find somebody who really wants to do it or find a way to do it as a blog or something.
There's also a course out there that's, I think, $20 on writing down your
mm-hmm.
life. And it guides you through writing your life story. So that might be another
wow.
way for him to approach it. I'll send you a link to that.
That would
I just
great.
Ran across
Thanks.
That last week. Yeah.
Woo!
Cool.
Yeah. Wow.
Who knows? Who knows
and you were
what,
speaking,
what might
you were
be there,
speaking
what gifts.
About soil. Yeah.
Yes.
You were speaking about soil, and this is very different, but my daughter was invited to do a benediction or a prayer or some kind of short talk at the site of a lynching near Jacksonville in Florida, where she's a priest. And she did it, and she said it was one of the most beautiful events. There was a lot of African drummers there, and there were a couple of other priests who spoke. She said they have taken this soil and put it in two jars, just a little bit in two different jars, One of them is going to a museum in Jacksonville, and one of them is going to a museum right in that town. That this particular 29-year-old man was lynched and beheaded in his own town. And they are paying attention to this. And she said, Mom, there's history in the soil. You look at the layers of the soil and you can tell it's like the rings in a tree. You can tell
exactly
what happened over the years. And here you are messing around with soil in a very different way, but it's so, she says, it's so rich. So you reminded me of that when you were talking now about the soil.
Did they video the event that she did?
I don't think so, but she did post.
Oh, that's too bad.
They did post a tiny little clip of it. I'll ask her. Ask Catherine.
Yeah, that
Reed.
Could be the beginning of a powerful documentary.
Wow.
And the world needs it right now with the movement toward, white nationalism and white supremacy and all.
Mm-hmm.
It could be powerful.
It's a great idea. Yeah, I'll ask her. I don't think it was. There is a tiny clip on Facebook. I could find it and show it to you. It's not much, and you don't see her. You hear the drumming, just a little section of the drumming.
Right.
She said, but the feeling there was rich. It was like a holy place, this redemption going on. Very powerful event.
Well, perhaps that event could be a seed event for the next celebration of life for that man and that soil. And that could be the root of the documentary, the starting point, especially in Florida right now, where they're working to pass laws that prevent professors from talking about things like that. I mean, literally that they're...
Literally, they are. I know.
And so it could be a powerful documentary. That would be sweet to have.
Wow, that's a great idea.
And there's probably lots of funding out there to produce a documentary like that, I would think, with all the stirring and interest there is in this whole racism thing. And something that could be really coming from the point of view of healing, you know, both sides of this conversation.
Good. Yeah.
There's an interesting piece that was done. Let me think, what's the guy's name? He did he created the film, Spurgeon is his name, and he created the film Supersize Me. And he had a TV series that he did. He might be interested as a documentary filmmaker. One of the sessions that he did was there was a man in Texas who was a self-appointed, we're keeping these dirty immigrants out of the country.
Mm-hmm.
And Spurgeon got him to agree to go and live with an illegal immigrant family in Texas for I forget what time period, and part of that was traveling to the hometown of these Mexican people. And when he saw why they were escaping and what they were escaping from, he became an advocate for these immigrants rather than literally going around with a gun on his hip threatening to kill them and, keep them out of the country. He became an advocate when he became acquainted with the human aspect of the story rather than the political story that's told about, they're
isn't
the problem
that always
in our
the
lives.
Answer?
They're the blame
that's
game.
Always the cure. Yeah.
Yes, bringing human life into it. So,
yeah.
So that might be a person, if that's of interest to her, that might be a person who Spurgeon, I forget his first name, but he did the movie Supersize Me, might be interested in doing a documentary around that kind of an event.
Wow. Yeah, I heard about
and even
that
if
movie,
there are just,
a guy who agreed to eat something like McDonald's for a year or something and what it did to his body. Wasn't that what that was
oh,
about?
Oh, yeah. It's horrific. I mean, he had heard a piece on TV about McDonald's being sued over the diseases caused by their food. And McDonald said, our food is balanced, it's nutrition, it's good food. And so he decided to do a 30-day, he was a very healthy vegetarian, and he decided to do a documentary on him eating nothing but McDonald's three times a day for a month. He started out and he had a physical done by, if I remember correctly, three different doctors. By about day 25, one of the doctors said, you're going to quit this or I'm off the team, because here's the number for the cardiac unit at the hospital. You're going to die if you don't stop this.
Yeah.
And he quit the team. You know, and that launched Spurgeon into doing, I don't know how long he did, it was maybe a year or so, he had a documentary series on one of the stations. I don't know exactly what happened to it, but that could be a man that would be really interested and could really turn that into something valuable to the world.
Wow. Okay.
Yay. So what other world problems can we solve today?
Well, I was on Dr. Tim's show and now I'm talking on this, but I have a beloved nephew, age 57, very healthy, we thought, a Buddhist, a meditator, who just had a heart attack. And
ouch.
Dr. Tim just did a podcast with a woman, I can't remember, Lisa somebody or other, who does something called neural sculpting, and she was a meditator. And she began having seizures, and her thought was, wait, I'm a meditator. I shouldn't be having seizures. What am I doing that I am not healing myself, even with meditation? Am I just putting a Band-Aid over something I need to look at? And so I'm going to send this podcast to my nephew because he's saying the same thing. What? I'm a meditator, and I just had a heart attack, and he's a runner. And he loves to sail. He retired early for various reasons and does consulting here and there, but is kind of like a nomad. But his father, talk about trauma. His father took his own life at age 32 when my nephew was 10 years old. And my nephew has done a lot of healing work on this, but there's more to be done. And also there's the genetic component. I think there's high cholesterol and stuff like that in the family, which I know from the work you do that those things can be healed too. So anyway, he
Absolutely.
And I are about to have a talk about all that. Yeah, I'd love
do you
to.
Have a,
if he has time, what?
Did we send you a copy of the video, a link to the video that Jeannie did on the app?
No, you haven't sent it, but I could look for it. You don't have to do that.
I'll send it.
Yeah.
I'll send it. That's easy. And that might be something to pass along to him because, you know, unless you're opening those unconscious dynamics and cleaning them up, they become an expression in the body. You know, they become a part of what
the body. Right. There you go.
Plays out.
Yeah. And my son was shocked. My son's turning 50 this month, and he was shocked because he's under a lot of stress at work. And he often says, I'm worried about my health. I don't know how good this is, that this hospital situation has become so stressful. It's just that the hospitals are limping along, not enough staff, good nurses jumping ship because they pay traveling nurses three times as much as they pay the nurses who stay put in one hospital. He said, I'm washing my own instruments. I'm cleaning the operating room before I do my operations. This is crazy.
Wow.
I'm under such pressure. So anyway, lots of topics, Michael. I don't mean to come in between you and your monologue that you're about to do. So
no, this is it. This is right on track. I'm actually going to send you, I just sent you the link to the app video, but I'm going to send you also a TED Talk by a man named Patch Adams. And Patch Adams, the movie Patch Adams, yeah, that.
That's it, yeah.
But this is the real Patch Adams in a TED Talk where he talks about what he did and why he did it and what he's doing. And basically, while he was in medical school, he started a free hospital. And they served between think he said there were 500 to 1,000 people that went through, and it was their home. They had the hospital as a home, and the community lived in the home, and they paid the cleaning staff the same as they paid the surgeons. And I mean, he's literally got his thousands of doctors who are signing up wanting to work with him, and some of them actually pay to be able to do it. But there's just a whole different model of healing. That might be interesting for your son to have a look at. So I sent you that text
well,
or link as well.
Well, I've taken about 6 notes of things to do. Thanks. Great idea.
Cool. That's what we're here for. One of the, I actually did some still point breathing yesterday, and one of the insights that came for me out of it is how, well, there's always been a question for me around the scriptural story of the Tower of Babel and why God would, you know, confound the languages so that they couldn't reach the level of God. And it's always been like, wait a minute, that just doesn't make sense. And yesterday in my still point session, I got really clear on what that was about, and that when we're trying with words to build a structure that allows us to truly live as human beings as love, we're trying to develop from a component called our minds that can't go there. We're trying to build something to make it go there. And of course, that religion of blame that's been around for so many thousands of years, it's God's fault. God confounded the languages. But the real message was, folks, you can't do it with your mind. You can't do it with your perceptual constructs. Your perceptual constructs can't go there. It's like, it isn't that God stopping us or anything. It's just, it's not possible to go there. And the follow-up to that was, you know, so many people are looking, in Aramaic, the words the kingdom of heaven are translated as the community of love. And so many people are wanting to, oh, I'm going to go to heaven. And it's, again, like so many other things, what I got yesterday is it's exactly backward. You can't go to the King of Heaven, but you can create this space in you where the community of love, where love comes and enters into you if you make space for it. And so many with their, you know, railing and their drama and trauma and their hellfire and brimstone sermons are trying to get to love. And there's a whole passage when I was breathing, Jenny went to it and read some of the stuff about how men try to take it by violence, trying to take the kingdom by violence, when the work is that of emptying oneself of the violence, the corrupt data based in hostility or fear, so that that energy can incarnate in us now alive. You know, Yeshua says that kingdom's in the midst of you, but it can't manifest while we've got hostility, fear, rage, guilt, grief, drama, and trauma in our structures. There isn't room for it. So it's just kind of like another reversal. Another thing that I'm seeing is how it's been done backward and trying to take it by force rather than through forgiveness. And that when we forgive everything that's based in generational violence in us, hostilities and fears, when we forgive those things, that's how we make space for the full incarnation of love that our physiology was designed for in the first place. Mind turns around backward, makes it God's fault, and that's why we're not there. It's somebody else's fault. That old blame thing has got so many permeations. It's just, you know, crazy.
Michael,
time.
I didn't, way back with the Tower of Babel, I didn't understand what you were saying. I'm sorry, I don't even know how to ask the question. You can't.
Okay, I got it.
You say you can't do it with your conceptual mind. Okay, good.
So the story in the scriptures speaks about how men were trying to build this tower to heaven, and Babel being words, trying to do it with words.
Oh, I see.
And so the scriptural story blames God for confounding the language and blocking us from doing that. And that's the piece, that's what never made sense to me. It's like, that's not something that the Creator would do. That just doesn't make any sense. And I never got it until yesterday's breathing session. And then, and it was just like the insight of, oh, no, we're trying to take a device, the mind, and make it a place where, a home where human life can be fully expressed, and trying to do it with babble, with words. And so what I got yesterday was that whole story. It wasn't about the Creator confounding the languages and blocking men from doing it. The message from the Creator was that device can't reflect it, can't do it. You know, it'd be kind of like, wow, I've got an AM radio, and I'm tinkering with the tuning in it and all that, and I'm trying to get it to receive the FM signal.
Right.
And, you know, the technician God comes along and says, you can't do that. And I go, oh, why are you trying to stop me from doing that? And it's like, no, it isn't that he's trying to stop you. The device is incapable of it. It can't happen there. And, you know, that's where, the story goes into, and we're trying to do it. Men are trying to take the kingdom by force, by violence. And so you hear all this preaching about hellfire and brimstone, as though that could ever send anybody to a space connected fully to love. And
I
so
understand,
it's like a piece of information.
I had always understood the Babel story totally differently, that suddenly they could all understand one another, even though they were speaking in different. They were hearing the truth about things in their own language, and foreign languages suddenly were discernible or decipherable or clear to them. I'll have to read the story again because my whole take on it was very different.
Actually, it's two different stories.
That would be more the story of speaking
of
tongues.
Oh, that's what
that
I'm
was
thinking
the day of.
Pentecost.
Yeah.
Thank you, Jamie.
So
yeah,
here's somebody that is consistent. Here's somebody that's consistent on every level of energy speaking truth, and it doesn't matter if it's being spoken in Italian or Russian or whatever. The vibration of it is so consistent and so clear that somebody who doesn't speak Russian would still understand the message that was being given. That's what speaking in tongues was. It wasn't some magical, weird language. It was just the vibration was so clear that anybody in the environment knew what was being spoken, even if they didn't understand the language. Tower of Babel being a different story of now men are with language trying to equate living as the Creator, living as gods.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the message was, your perceptual constructs can't go there. You go there, or you allow that to arrive in you through forgiveness, not by trying to build something in to make it happen. It's like it had it all backward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you, Jeannie, because I was completely befuddled. Yeah, okay, good. Do you happen to know where in the Bible that Tower of Babel story is? I could certainly look it up, but if it's right there in front of you.
I'll give it to you in just a minute.
Thank you, Jeannie. Jeannie the genius.
She was doing energy field work on me and breathing me as I came up with one of these, she had her phone and went to the scripture quotes and was reading it. It was just like opening insight after insight. It was awesome.
Wow.
Genesis chapter 11. Genesis chapter 11, mm-hmm. 1 through 9 is the Tower of Babel. And then the Pentecost, of course, doesn't take place till the New Testament.
Right. Okay, and I was completely mixing them up. So thank you.
Yep.
Oh.
So breathing with you. Arrival in our physiology of what was called, you know, the kingdom that was in our midst, its arrival comes by breathing and through forgiveness, removing the blocks that keep it from expressing through us. Where you know, in the Tower of Babel story, it's like, no, we're going to do it through effort. It made a whole other level of sense of you can't do this by an act of will. Your own will can't take you there.
Yeah.
It's there. It's available 24/7, 365 to everybody who chooses to meet the conditions which allow it to enter and manifest. And the conditions don't come through effort and imagination. They come through forgiveness and breath.
Mm.
And it arrives in us here and now. And, you know, there are so many problems in the world. And, you know, everybody's working on trying to solve the effect without going back and looking at the cause. And if we deal with the cause level, then all of the insane problems are healed when the mind of active present love, the true state of being that we are, shows up in our own physiology. Then we all know exactly what to do to clean it up. So breathing with you.
Thanks. Good work, Michael. You had a breakthrough revelation thingamabob.
I did. It was
Tim
really
Bingham
sweet.
Tim is standing over me looking as if he wants to say something. So I'm.
Oh, cool. I'd love to hear his voice.
Yeah. All right, Tim, you're locked in. You have to come in here and say hi to Michael. He's leaving the room again. He's sneaking out. Come on, Tim. Say hi to Michael.
Hello, Michael.
Hey there, young man. Good to hear your voice. How are you?
Fine, thanks. How are you?
I'm rocking. I'm doing very well.
That's a long answer. How are you, Michael? Yeah, Tim wants to make sure I'm going to walk with two. Now he's escaping the room again. Okay. Bye, Tim. Yeah. Well, there's stuff to talk about endlessly, but why don't you mute me and I'll listen for the rest.
If there's something else on your mind, let's go for it. Otherwise, we'll see what else is happening.
Well, why don't you see what else is happening? Permission, but he is working on something, and your input would be great. But, you know.
Okay. So, Jeannie, do we have anybody with a hand up? Or?
Nobody has a hand up, and there are no questions in the chat room.
Then it's all your space.
Okay. Hey, Tim, of course, I'm asking, can I ask Michael about your dark man? He says, sure. Tim's been working with a woman who, her name is Mira Rubin, and she's like you. She has discovered a healing method, which Tim has found very appealing, and he's been meeting with her once a week. It's
awesome.
Very intense. I worked with her for a while, and I found it just uncomfortable, and of course I could do millions of worksheets on why am I feeling as if I'm on the hot seat, but it was an uncomfortable way to work, and since I've been working using your tools, I feel much safer working with your tools. That's all besides
okay.
That. Tim's anxiety has increased since he's been working with her. And he's thinking it's because things are getting stirred up, but he's also wondering if working with her is not helping, not only not helping, but maybe hurting. And so when we go for walks, we talk about what his anxiety is like. And he yesterday told me about how he pictures there's a huge, dark, angry man lurking in the forest. Who this angry man comes out and scares him, and scares him over ridiculously simple things, like he might have to drive, and granted, Tim has macular degeneration in one eye, so he's a little nervous about driving in unknown areas. He gets overly anxious about driving in a strange place, or gets very anxious about an errand he has to run that he may have run before, but somehow the dark man seems to be right near the surface. And I wonder, just sort of from the little I've told you, whether you have a thought about what's going on there.
Well, I have a couple of thoughts. The first one is, if she's doing effective work to open the veil of the temple, then
mm-hmm.
that dark man, which I would suggest probably represents his power person or the generational power person in his family, is coming closer and closer to the surface. And so there would tend to be more anxiety as that comes to the surface. And if she's not
mm-hmm.
using tools to effectively dissolve the things that are coming to the surface, then perhaps what he might want to do is add to the processes he's doing with her, the worksheet, so that as things surface, if she doesn't have a way to diffuse the energy of what's surfacing, then add the forgiveness process in so that, okay, so I'm accessing this. Now I have a tool with which I can
mm-hmm.
literally remove or forgive what's surfacing.
Mm-hmm. Good idea.
So that would be my best input if she's working effectively. Now, I have no idea what she's doing for me. You've told me she does some pretty good work, but if she's working in a way that she's reinforcing the thought disorders, then probably it would be good to step away from it. But I would at least start off working by bringing in the forgiveness process and using that in conjunction. Each time he does a session there, keep a note of what are the things, what are the descriptors of the realities that need to be forgiven, and apply the worksheet to it and see if that, if the
mm-hmm.
two things hand in hand might just really catapult his process forward.
Okay, good. Thanks.
If he's going into a healing crisis by having layers uncovered, but if there's not an effective way to dissolve the layers that are being uncovered,
mm-hmm.
just opening things up isn't necessarily helpful.
Yeah. Good.
I mean, ultimately to heal, things have to be opened up. But if they're being opened and the stresses of them aren't being resolved, then just increasing the stress by opening things without resolution is not helpful.
Well,
was
good.
It your experience when you were working with her, when you said it was uncomfortable? Was it your experience that she was helping you to access things that you'd been hiding?
I'm not sure what was going on, but it was early childhood being on the hot seat feelings, and I didn't want to work that way. It's on Zoom, one-on-one. She's sitting right in my face. I'm sitting in her face, and she's saying, what do you picture in your body? And, of course, my imagination can make up stuff or what. And she says it doesn't matter if you're making it up or not. And I would find images and things, and then she'd say, well, what is it doing now, and what's it doing now, and what's it doing now? And I think my complaint was maybe it was great to find out things and go there, but my overall feeling was extreme discomfort at working under such close scrutiny. Of course, this is material for worksheets up and down and sideways, but when it came
yes.
time for the turnover and she said, do you want to keep working? I'd say, no, I'm working with Michael Rice. I'm using the tools. My life is getting better and better, and I feel more comfortable working in a different way. Of course, that could be resistance, denial. She was good about it. She said, oh, okay, and that was the end of that. Tim wanted to keep on working with her. So
well, maybe his path is to keep digging at that, but I'd
yeah.
offer put the worksheets in the equation so that what he's digging out is being diffused in the process.
Right. Well, I sneak in tools. I mean, when we're walking, I talk about goals and power person stuff. And yesterday we had a good long walk, and he said he felt much better after we talked, and all day today he's been better. So maybe something already
dispersed or resolved. I'm not sure. We'll have to see whether it all comes back again. But he has a lot of fears coming up. And I wonder if it's partly aging. I remember having an older friend at Sarah Lawrence where I went to college. She worked in the music library. And she told me that as she got older and older, she had more and more anxiety and felt more fragile about doing certain things. And I know my grandparents, my grandfather, particularly my mother's dad, felt that way. Afraid, like a little agoraphobic, afraid of doing things he used to do all the time. I noticed that in myself, more caution about going out in the world or spending a lot of time getting really exhausted late at night. I like to be quiet starting around 5 or 6 at night. Don't know whether that's the aging process. I can sort of hear you saying, no, you don't have to. I mean, you could live forever. And believe me, Michael, I think I understand why you talk about we don't have to die. I understand that.
Right.
Even though I fight against you because I don't want to get day by day, I feel as if I'm just getting more decrepit. And I think, do I want to wait till 49 and show up with a shell of a body all wrinkled up and in a wheelchair? You know, that's not what you're saying, I know.
No.
But
no.
I guess I'm going all over the place with this one.
You go back and you hear them talking about this idea that the veil of the temple must be rent in twain. And
mm-hmm.
You know, you've heard me say it before. That wasn't about a purple curtain in the church. The temple is this body-mind unit, and the veil is the barrier between the subconscious and the unconscious. I think that that barrier, as aging occurs, what's called aging, becomes more of a, rather than a solid lid, it becomes more of a fenestrated barrier with openings in it where things can pop through more easily. And if one doesn't have the tools for resolution, then it does become anxiety producing. If they allow the fenestrated barrier, the openings in it, to open a little wider, and things that yesterday were well hidden, so, you know, any impact of that energy was physiological, I went, oh, well, that's just the disease of aging, as opposed to allowing those things to start to poke their heads up and having to deal with them. And I think that barrier just kind of naturally starts to erode as aging occurs. It's harder to keep the lid on tight, and things start to move.
Wow, is that a great thought? That these are good things. These are invitations. It's like
yes.
You going to the movie and, you know, letting some kind of horror show scare you into doing a worksheet on something.
Processing,
a,
you know, I mean,
yeah.
The movie can't move anything in me that isn't already in me.
I get it.
Life can't move anything in me that isn't already in me. And if something moves it, I can do one of two things. I can hold my breath. I can go have myself a fifth of scotch. I can shut it down and pretend it was never there. And now its impact is going to be purely or pretty much physiological, which means it's going to become some kind of degenerative condition within the tissue. Or I can open it and go, wow, that really moves some fear, some sadness, some grief, some rage. What's the goal that I have around this rage? Who am I pointing my ray? Oh, it's at that person in the mirror that I look at. So what's the goal I just want to be perfect. You know, I want to please my power person. Oop, bingo.
Mm. Wow.
So now starting to cancel the need to please my power person and now drop into all the assaults my power person ever did to me. That's a huge piece of work to do because that's been going on in everybody's bloodline forever. So if you're the early adopter and step in and deal with that, it can get pretty intense. That's Joan Salk saying that, you know, the best thing we can do is be a good ancestor.
Whoa. Well, you don't know this, Michael, but what you just said caused an amazing level. That's just great. I'm going to really think about it that way. That's great. I'm almost speechless. What? That's great. that this is a good thing. This is an opportunity, not this is the ending.
Absolutely. It actually, allowing those things to surface and process through them is what reverses the aging process. Remember, aging doesn't have to do with time. It looks like time is the enemy. You know, if on day one we put this much trauma in, day two, day three, day four, you know, on day four people say, well, I'm older than I was on day one, and look at how much more trauma is going on in my life. I guess it must be the 4 days, the time. But no, it's not the time. It's what I put in on day one, day two, day three, day four.
Mm-hmm.
That has created the apparent degeneration caused by time. So when I can allow, and I think it's kind of naturally built into the system that as people appear to be aging, their weakness manifests more, their defenses are down, and that barrier becomes fenestrated, becomes like, you know, it's got openings in it, and things start to pop up. And when they pop up, if you grab those little suckers by the head and forgive them, then you just reverse aging. So that in 49-49, you show up with a robust, powerful, strengthened physiological form that has no generational energy of offense left in it to destroy it.
Wow. Sort of a race against time at this point, though, isn't it? Whoa. Clear it all out before you
And maybe, you know, somebody can be right at the precipice of death. I mean, they're walking toward death. It's 3 days, 2 days, 1 day. They're right on the edge of the cliff. And they can step forward and step off the cliff, and it's death. Or they could step back a step. And another step and another step. And now it's 2 days from death. It's 3 days. It's 4 days. It's reversing the process. Because death isn't a natural physiological phenomenon.
So it's not only just stopping the process. You're talking about reversing it. I haven't
reversing
really taken
it.
That in. Yeah.
Absolutely reversing it. It's taking the load off of the tissue that makes it appear that the tissue's degenerating over time. When you take the load off of the tissue that's creating the degeneration, then the tissue regenerates over time, and time becomes a friend.
Whoa.
So can you softly, gently open your face and your breath on that one?
Already
and let
did.
Every part of your tissue structure just breathe into it and be with it. It's like, whoa, yeah.
Yeah. Such a great idea. Amazing how many times you have to say things, because I'm sure you have said this before. Before it gets through.
Yeah. Well, you go to those ancient teachings and it tells us exactly where death began. It says with man. Wasn't built into the creation. Wasn't built into the system. We're the ones who started to introduce the disintegrative energies that produce death. And if we're the one that introduced them, we're the ones that can remove them. And then when the disintegrative energies are removed, there is a vacuum that draws active present love literally into every cell in the structure. And there's the key to eternal life. And that eternal life means robust, empowered, strong, solid, and eternal. It isn't about having eternal degeneration but living through it. No, it's about eternal regeneration by taking the killer genes out of the structure, forgiving them, grasping them, and throwing them out. No, my visual for everybody that shows up in 49-49 is robust, strong, trim, healthy, and vital. And radiating a full measure of active present love continuously.
Well, okay.
And along with that,
demons showing up.
Go ahead.
If I show up there,
and I have maintained and reversed my decrepitude and become young, and I show up there. Haven't I kept myself from shedding this body and moving ahead in my evolution without this body so that I can remain in line with the people I love the most who have gone on in other ways and I may never see again? Am I making any sense?
Yeah, certainly from the ego's perspective, that's exactly the truth.
Okay.
Yes. But that's, again, a construct that's developed over time that is a reflection of many, many, many thought disorders that need to be forgiven. Remember what they called this place we were put into initially?
Eden?
Yes, the Garden of Eden. Guess who pooped in the garden, made of it a place nobody wants to live in too long? We did. This is meant to be the place for full human expression and manifestation
mm-hmm.
of aliveness, of the presence of active love. This is the environment in which it happens. There isn't a better place to go to make that happen. In fact, I was sharing with Jeannie, this was kind of another piece of the puzzle that I got yesterday. You know, I've shared with you a couple times that back several months ago I did a still point session and had this, you know, this darkness that I saw and these bits of light
yeah,
and realized that this unfathomable number of people in their darkness, carrying their darkness, were my ancestors, and they were asking for help to process it. And what occurred to me yesterday when I was breathing, it was the first time I'd seen this piece of that, was the conclusion that I come to from that experience of those ancestors wanting support and assistance is that the space they're in without bodies, they can't do that work. It's like it's not, their state isn't conducive to them moving through those things for whatever reason. I'm not sure I understand it, but the fact that they were asking me for that support yesterday, what occurred to me is because we can do that process work here while we're in the garden. But somebody who's not, it appears at least, can't do that work. And that's why they were asking for help. So that was kind of my insight on that one yesterday. So I think this is the ideal environment in the ideal space. That's why it was referred to as the Garden of Eden, for full human expression at the level it's possible to do.
So as for all my other machinations, I just trust this process and let all those thoughts go.
That would be my input.
They're not helpful. Okay. I understand. That's a neat idea. I hope we don't pollute the planet so much that we can't do that. See, there I go again, Michael. Yeah.
Well, and that's one of the objections I've heard from people over the years. Well, if nobody died, we'd have so many people, we wouldn't be able. Well, wait a minute. There's so much non-human expression in the world, and so there's so much crap going on that people are wasting their time, intelligence, their money, their energy, their creative process in. What if we got through that? Maybe then we would get a picture of what it's really about. And who knows what that might look like? That might look like, you know, we jump to Mars in a week, and you know, we populate Mars and we create, you know, I mean, who knows what it looks like when full human creativity and life shows up on the planet, and there is no inhibitor called hostility or fear left? Who knows where we'll be living? What that will look like? But I don't think we've got a clue about what it is now, with the amount of hostility and fear that we're carrying, and, of course, living in the religion of blame, blaming everybody else. You know, man is trying through words to build a tower to reach, quote unquote, heaven. The state where they live is the presence of love. The Creator informs man that mechanism can't go there. And man blames God for knocking down their tower because God's somehow jealous or something. It's like, no, 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 that's not it at all. But a thousand generations have created all kinds of resistant stories based in hostility or fear. And that's why the recognition that whenever hostility or fear comes up, the end result of hostility or fear is always some sort of corrupt picture that needs to be forgiven. Elsewise, it can seem like, oh, well, you know, here's the reason we shouldn't. And, you know, there are a thousand stories, a million stories in the naked mind, and each of them needs to be forgiven. And then the full empowerment of human life has a place to land, our human bodies and the Garden of Eden. But it hasn't shown up yet, so nobody knows what it's going to look like when it does, but I guarantee it's not going to look anything like what it looks like now. With all the non-being dynamics that the world plays out. So my offering is your physiology and the space you live in is the Garden of Eden designed to give a full flower to your human beingness, a place for you and I to live, each of us, to live in this creative space of active present love. And the only thing that inhibits it is everything that our generations have made up that goes into resistance to that. So there's work to be done.
No kidding.
How cool, how cool is that?
Oh, boy. Thanks, Michael.
And I think your phrase of trusting the process, trusting it, is part of the key. I mean, for thousands of years, men, humans, pardon me, I should really say to be accurate, non-humans, have been trusting in hostility and fear and rage and guilt and grief and war and theft and, you know, manipulation, blah, blah, blah. Part of the soil thing we were doing today, one of the questions that came up in it is, you know, do we try to milk the earth, the soil, for everything we can get from it? Are we stealing from it without giving it back inputs? What would it be like if we lived in a truly natural relationship with it, where there's an exchange that nurtures both sides of the equation rather than the soil being destroyed? So, you know, it comes into soil building.
Yeah.
And if everything were to fall in line with that expression, the game would be somewhat different. And as they said in the ancient teachings, the mind of man has not yet conceived of what that's going to look like, what lies in store.
Yeah.
So let's just keep creating the space to comprehend it on deeper and deeper levels and join in doing that. And the show's going to cut us off any second.
Okay.
So I hold the space and I breathe with you and I cherish you. And
thanks,
everybody. Look forward to you. Hey.
Hour.
Absolutely delighted. Blessings, young lady. Appreciate you.